$100 million.
Good afternoon. We're going to call the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee to order. And the first item of information that we're going to do is the minutes of March 5th and March 6th. Representative Uglem, have you reviewed the minutes, and would you be willing to make a motion to approve both sets of minutes?
Read them cover to cover, and I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Any additions or corrections to the minutes that the members would like to move? There being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails on the March 5th and 6th minutes. The first bill before us today, members, is House File 49, Representative Fabian. 949, I'm sorry. And Representative Fabian moves that House File 949 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources and Agricultural Finance Committee. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 949 is a bill that's trying to address a situation that's really been a problem in northern Minnesota for a number of years. And there's seven counties: Roseau, Marshall, Kitson, Beltrami, Lake of the Woods, Clearwater, Manoman, and Aiken, and Couchiching County that are directly affected by the issues that we're trying to address here today. Those counties have teamed together to form a Joint Powers Natural Resources Board. And what's really at issue here is the determination of benefits of payments of ditch taxes. And we're going to hear a lot about ditches and so forth today. First thing I want to emphasize is that when we talk about ditches and cleaning ditches and taxes and maintaining ditches and so forth, we're certainly not even coming close to talking about draining wetlands and that sort of stuff. I think there's a misconception amongst some people that that's actually what's going on. In this case here, these ditches have been in place for many, many years. They are used in my part of the world, in the ag community, to make sure that the drainage and so forth takes place so that farmers obviously can protect their crops. In the silviculture industry, ditches are important so that we can maintain healthy forest stands and so forth. Under the current system, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources gets to determine their benefits from the ditch system. So try to imagine that if you own 80 acres and the DNR owns 80 acres right next to you, and somebody else owns 80 acres on the other side, and everybody's connected to the same ditch system, the local ditch authority assesses taxes so that they can maintain the ditches to keep them clean so that the water will keep flowing. Well, you get assessed a tax, and it might be $100, and your neighbor gets assessed a tax, it's $100. You have to pay your $100 assessment. DNR doesn't do that. DNR gets to determine their benefit from the ditch system. And you'll hear testimony today that really is quite striking about what percentage of the actual assessed ditch taxes that they pay. So this practice then results in an artificial inflation of what the local property owners have to pay in order to be able to maintain the ditches. At this time, I'd like to have my testifiers come down from northern Minnesota. If you remember, here he is.
Welcome to the committee, and if you'll please go up to the mic and introduce yourself for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lon Owney. I'm with the county engineer for Marshall County, and I appreciate you taking the opportunity, or at the time giving us the opportunity, to listen to what we have to say. Some of the concerns we have with the current setup is that we have landowners within the state or within our county that are paying ditch tax, and we determine that for them. They don't tell us what the ditch tax is. The DNR has put together a formula that is a very extensive formula, and I respect the fact that it's a long process that they have to do for reviewing it. But they tell us whether they benefit from the drainage or not. The other thing that we run into with this is the basis of benefit determination is hydraulically for all landowners except for the DNR property. I've looked at their matrix, and it's based on how they manage the property not on whether it benefits hydraulically or not, which is inconsistent with what our landowners in the county are paying. The other issue that we have with this is that we have a ditch law that us as the ditch authority are required to follow, being 103 and all the letters after that. This law that's in place contradicts that. So me as a county engineer that represents the ditch authority, I'm obligated to make sure that the people that are draining into that ditch system are paying benefit into that ditch system. I can't do that with the law that's in place from the DNR because they determine whether or not they pay benefit for it. The 103 laws tell me that if somebody is paying or is using the ditch system and not paying benefit to the ditch system, then we are obligated to either add them to the ditch system through a process or remove their drainage from the ditch system. And again, I'm not allowed to do that with the DNR properties. I'm going to let Scott explain more so the administrative end of it and the impacts of us financially.
Welcome, Mr. Peters. State your name and who you represent for the record. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Scott Peters. I'm Auditor Treasurer in Marshall County, Minnesota. Thanks for having us here today. Appreciate it. Hope we don't bore you. But I've never done this before, so I don't know exactly how we should be talking. But from a money standpoint,
English is helpful.
English is good.
For me, at least.
There's two sets of laws here that we look at. 103E, where we can assess property as a ditch authority just to keep a ditch going, make sure there's enough money in there to keep the thing floating, literally. 84A is CONCON area legislation, which causes so that the DNR does not have to pay the ditch tax because, and what happens is, in my point of view, they both, these two laws collide. We can send out all these tax statements we want, and we have no other means but to do that. We have to send these statements out or some type of billing system to get into our system, but the state at the same time does not necessarily have to pay it. It's kind of amazing that in our county how everything started from the beginning. CONCON lands, as a committee, if you're familiar with that, the ditches came about and then in our county, and ditches were so vitally important to our area because we're an agricultural-based society. People lost their land in the 20s, unfortunately, and it got to be huge volumes of land that forfeited. The state took that over, and it became now the CONCON land. Now, the poor people that lost the land back in the 20s lost it because they couldn't pay their ditch tax. The ones that kept the land that are still there paying their ditch tax, they're still the only ones paying because now the state has said, we don't want to pay the ditch tax. The irony of it all is this is a battle that seems to, I just can't understand why it's there. I believe the money that's spent in trying to redetermine benefits, redetermine wheels, not let 103E work, the cost for that is more than the cost just to pay the tax itself. In our county, we assess about $500,000 of ditch tax yearly, of that which approximately $35,000 is the state's responsibility. The last 2 years, we've gotten zero money from the state, whether it's in the CONCON area or not. I know that their 84A does keep the state, hold them from harm or from the ability to pay, I guess, within the CONCON area, but even outside the CONCON area, it's not being paid. We all need to keep this ditch going, and however a person wants to manage their land, whether it's the state wanting to put geese out there or if it's Farmer John that wants to raise 100 bushel wheat, everybody has the right to have that ditch and try to keep it alive. We have some ditches now that are filling up with silt. They're not being able to be used. The farmers are suffering because of this. Our tax system is backed up because we can't forfeit the land, but we can't not send the tax statements out. It's a frustrating situation. We send tax statements out and we're asked to give more information regarding projects, which we don't have projects, it's simply an assessment. And that's exactly what we're doing under 103E. The laws aren't working together. We need and ask this committee to make the laws work together. We hope that we think 84A is wrong. But if we're wrong, then get it leased so we don't have to send the tax statements out anymore. Let it make sense. Make the laws make sense. These farmers that come and pay their taxes, I certainly want to make sure that they can have a good neighbor in the state that pays their fair share as long as that farmer pays his share as well. If the farmer is the only one paying, It's not fair. And we have a law on the books that's causing a problem for our people that live there.
Thank you very much. And further testifiers?
Just one more real quickly, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Welcome, and state your name and who you represent.
My name is Todd Miller. I'm a Roseau County Commissioner, and I'm here representing the Joint Powers Natural Resource Board. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having us here. It's a wedge issue for the counties. We need to cooperate with the DNR on all different levels about a multitude of things. And, you know, we make a couple steps forward, and issues like this bring us way back. So it's got a definite impact on the economy up there, the drainage we need for our farming. In Roseau's particular case, a lot of this state land, this ConCon land, is at the headwaters, and there's not a lot of cooperation in even doing flood control projects to limit the amount of water coming off the land. So we're asking for help from this committee to make this right. It's quite a burden on the taxpayers to that system. They own it. We as the drainage authority have to maintain it, and the burden with the DNR not paying their ConCon ditch taxes gets shifted then to the local landowners that need that for drainage, and it's fundamentally unfair. So we ask for your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Not at this time.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for any of the testifiers. Are any of the properties within the ConCon lands, are any of the ditches formally abandoned?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I think I'll defer to the Marshall County engineer on that.
I can speak for the Marshall County portion of it, and no, we do not have any that are abandoned in that area that we're aware of, or that I'm aware of. We have several ditch systems, but they all flow through the state properties, and we go through the process to get them abandoned if we have to.
Go ahead, sir.
They're not abandoned, some of these properties, but some are in extreme states of disrepair.
Right.
I know one JD11, there's supposed to be a 9-foot swale to go through there. It's down to 1 foot now. And there's not enough money ever in the system to do it.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was my question. You may have virtual abandonment where they're no longer maintained, and have willows or have the, but you, there aren't any that have gone through the formal abandonment process.
Correct.
And, Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen,
have you explored going through the formal abandonment process on any of these systems?
To the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have that kind of language in a new LUP plan for parcels of this area. However, it's the water that comes out of there that even if there was ditch abandonment, you would have sheet or overland flooding because it's at such a high elevation. The rest of the system takes the brunt of it. So the shifting of the costs to the rest of the system, even if you take out abandonment, is still going to be considerable.
And Mr. Chair, to follow up, these are complicated issues, but with the bill saying that the DNR or the commissioner should pay, essentially then that's saying all of our constituents should pay for the benefit of the drainage on the ConCon lands. If the DNR is acting as a trustee for the state, and if the DNR is acting as a trustee for the state and paying the assessment for the benefit of that, then we get into the definition of benefits. So a concern of mine is, then do we come back if we assign that benefit that the state pays the benefit, and then there's a clean out, and we push the water off the land faster, and then we come back for some flood money later on because we have flooding. We get on this treadmill that we never end. And I think if the DNR is holding the land and has the system, there is a benefit if they hold that water back. I'd be more comfortable if they were acting in trust for my constituents to hold that water back rather than going down a pathway where they're going to be cleaning it out, and we have to pay somewhere else for that. Are you following what I'm saying?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. Both the Mr. Owney and Mr. Miller would like to answer your question. They've been jabbing me pretty hard here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of that is when the assessment took place, there's language both in this 84A, the rule, and in statute. The language is interchangeable on what they did when they made the rules, just lifted out of statute, the same language in how they would assess the land for natural resources, wildlife propagation, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what that land is assessed for already. So you would not be changing that equation. The ditch systems in and of themselves convey water out of there. Some of them we've done some culvert sizing on. Some have been turned into protected trout streams, so you really can't do anything with them or change the hydrology, including water storage. Yeah, that's a good point, but the ditch systems themselves do not have a lot of capacity to store water. So then what happens is it goes overland and comes down through the farm country from higher elevations in sheet flow. So,
Mr. Chairman, I get Representative Hansen. What we end up dealing with is a lot of our ConCon lands, the ditches pass through them to benefit other properties, so we can't close them off. We have to continue the maintenance of those. And what happens with the lack of funding, we're not able to get the contractors in there to do the maintenance to keep the ditch from flowing. That refers back to what Scott was saying, where the channel itself just gets overgrown and everything else. The thing with the assessments, it's not the same as doing an assessment for an urban improvement project. This is an ongoing ditch assessment that the landowners pay for the maintenance purpose of that ditch. And what's happening now is that fund is being basically depleted because we don't have enough money in there to cover the costs of it. And part of that comes from the fact that we have a lot of properties that aren't paying into it from the ConCon area.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, just one other point along that line. We would love to have the DNR cooperate even more than we have had in the past with regards to creating upstream flood retention areas so that we can hold more water back. The Hay Creek Norland Project, the Ross Project, I mean, these are some that have come forward, and they really are making a significant, they're making some significant strides toward, in this case, the Roseau River Watershed District, meeting their goal of holding back 20% of the flow during peak flow times that the Red River Management Basin has requested that all watersheds do. So that's another topic for discussion that I would certainly be glad to have.
Okay, Representative Hansen, and then we're going to go to Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one final question. So I think I understand you that rather than having viewers go out and determine the benefits and the assessments, the DNR is using a formula to determine the assessments or determine the benefits which lead to the assessments. But then the DNR, so you haven't had independent viewers go in and make that determination of benefits in the recent past.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I think a couple of testifiers would like to answer your question. Representative Hansen, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, the benefited areas had already been assessed, and that's what the county, the drainage authorities were using. I'll give you, for instance, in Roseau County, I'm not exact on the figures, but like out of 3,000 parcels that were redetermined by the DNR, 23 were determined to have some benefit. Not what was originally assessed, but that's out of 3,000 parcels, 23 were deemed to have some drainage value. So, thanks.
That's part of what we're getting at is the inconsistency in how benefit is determined. So back to the word of benefit, how do we define that? Based on the formula that's used, again, it's a hydraulic benefit for all of the landowners. And based on the DNR report that we have, it's a management benefit. So it's how they manage their property for their uses, which, that is neither here nor there. But the fact of benefit, the word term benefit is defined differently, and it's inconsistent. And to reflect what Todd was talking about, we have close to 3,040 acre parcels in Marshall County, and it's been determined that only 155 of those benefit from the ditches.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if either Mr. Bankson or Mr. Kiesel could tell me, could any of these CONCON lands that the DNR has be turned into productive ag land today?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the CONCON acres and a lot of these ditch systems were old farmlands. They are not real productive. It's high ground. But they're used for wildlife management areas. You know, they get mowed and used in that. They could be turned back. Some of it could be good productive farmland, but in our particular case, not much. Thanks.
And one other question, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if Representative Fabian knows or if maybe the DNR knows, what funds does DNR actually pay when they do pay any of these ditch taxes? Do you know what fund that money comes out of?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I do not know what fund that comes out of, no. I'm sure DNR is here.
We have the department down here in a moment. Representative McNamara, we can ask that question then. Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to get my hands around this. It seems a little complex. As I'm trying to understand it, is the state lands and the CONCON, they're kind of to holding water back and doing that kind of work? In terms of restoring wetlands type things, or what's this is where I'm running confusion is the DNR is managing lands up there. Are they like trying to hold water back and then the ditches are draining it off? So, and this is where I get confused.
Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fisher. I can't talk to what DNR's intentions are with the lands. There's very few areas that I'm aware of where they're intentionally trying to hold back water through some sort of an artificial process. There's lots of these areas up there we are a wetland. With all due respect to everybody that likes wetlands, we are a wetland in northern Minnesota. And I don't know if I think Scott was the treasurer auditor from Marshall County was looking at me like maybe he wanted to address that too, but you'd have to ask DNR what their management plan is on those areas. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of WMAs in just the four counties that I represent.
Representative Fisher.
Yeah, just follow up. And the reason I'm asking is because if they're holding lands and they're trying to be wetlands, but you've got a ditch system that's in that, from my understanding, the benefit is the ditch is to either, is to run water off or keep it away from certain parcels. It seems kind of you're trying to hold water back, but then you're going to assess them for running water off. It seems kind of cart before the horse. It just doesn't seem to make, it doesn't seem logical to me. That's why I'm asking the question.
All right, members, we're going to be voting on this bill very soon to the testifier.
I believe that the DNR manages the lands differently for different subjects. Keep in mind, though, that the ditch is not for what a person wants for their management of their property. The ditch is there just to help manage the water as a whole for the whole area. If a person wants to use it or not, if a person wants to raise wild rice on their property and needs the water, they can still do that in their property. But if the one next to it wants to put wheat, they have to be able to use it. The ditch is there for everybody, and whether you're the county, the township, the state, whatever entity, the St. Rose Lutheran Church, they all have to pay into this assessment just for that. It's just like the ditch was here, and we all get a benefit from that ditch, whether you want to have it for whatever purpose you do, and he has anything for his. We all have to pay into this to get this value. To make sure this thing works. If it doesn't work for at all, none of us are getting value out of it anymore.
Mr. Meyer, do you want to come down and answer the question of Representative McNamara's, or do you have someone else here that could answer that question? And thank you very much to the testifiers. Hang in there. We may have some more questions, but it'll be a few only.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, did you hear the McNamara question?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I think there was several questions. One of them was, have we sold or are any of these lands productive at all? We've sold off most of the productive lands that are there. Over half of the CONCON lands have been sold that would be able to be farmed, that are farmable. These lands are managed as wildlife management areas and state forests for the most part. So the other question
regarded the appropriation of how the payments are made.
the payments that where we have determined benefit, those payments would come from the general fund. You know, this story goes back to the 1900s, actually, in the 1929, at the request of the counties, legislation was passed that required the state to pay the ditch debt owed by the counties, and in turn, the state received these lands. 1984, Minnesota statutes were enacted allowing the Department of Natural Resources to develop rules for determining drainage benefits. The formal process wasn't initiated until 2002. 2000, there was a lawsuit filed by the counties over the issue. 2001, the Court of Appeals stated that the DNR commissioner has almost total discretion in determining how much should be paid on assessments, determining those benefits. I can go on and on, but the real issue is Chapter 84A versus 103. These lands aren't farmlands. These lands are to maintain water, and we are working with the counties and other folks to do what we can to retain water on the lands up there, but it's the benefit that we see is keeping water on the land, not getting water off of the land. We've gone through an elaborate rulemaking process and determination process that I think the testifiers have spoke of, parcel by parcel, looking at the benefits. Unfortunately, only 5 to 10% of the lands have we, as we've determined for our management practices, actually received benefit. So we're paying a small amount, yes, but it's what we want, the water on the land versus water being drawn off the land is the issue here.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Ness.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lance Ness, president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. This is almost a history lesson, Mr. Chairman. This issue goes back so far. I'll try to put it in a nutshell and then I'll get out of here. Back in the early 1900s, these lands were drained. In the 1920s and 30s, the counties went bankrupt. The state assumed all the lands back in collection of the revenues owed. Over the following decades, about two-thirds of those lands were sold back into private ownership. The remaining one-third was about 103,000 acres. When Joe Alexander, one of his last acts was to sign a commissioner's order to designate those lands as wildlife management areas. And in 2000, the legislature passed that act. There was some questions. The attorney general then said that the legislature had to approve of that. The legislature did approve of those, and they became wildlife management areas. So now the question is drainage law versus conservation. Our folks believe that the DNR should be holding those lands in conservation, not only for fish and wildlife, but for flood storage, water quality issues, things like that. The lands are pretty much in their best use as wildlife management lands. They are wild lands. They aren't suitable for farming. That gets back again to the way the ditches are assessed. Normally in the ditch assessment process, when you improve your land, you assess benefits. The ditch authority then sends out a viewer who estimates what the land is worth and then assesses the proper benefits to all the landowners adjacent to the ditch. We think the DNR should be exempted from these. They're holding lands for a different purpose other than agriculture or making land, as one said, growing wild rice. It's a different use of the lands. And therefore, we oppose the bill, Senator Ripson.
Thank you very much. Anyone else testify for or against the bill? There being none, Representative Fabian, do you have any closing statements?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. There's just a couple of things. First of all, with regards, this goes back to Representative Fisher's question, too. There's nothing in the ditch system that precludes the DNR from holding water on their land. You know, ditches don't automatically siphon water off of the land. You have to create something to get the water to the ditch. I mean, there's a natural flowage, of course, just because the land is sloped. But you know, the ditch system doesn't somehow just run through the middle of DNR land. These ditches, for the vast majority of these cases, are the roadside ditches that you see along any ditch, any road, anywhere in the state. So to think that we're somehow siphoning water off the land. I don't think that that's accurate. DNR has said over and over again in northwestern Minnesota that they want to be a better neighbor. They would like to improve the relations with the local people up there, the county commissioners. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your excellent testimony, yep. Representative Fabian. Any further discussion by the members on the bill? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, you know, the one thing that does bother me on this is that, and even though the representative from the DNR did read it in statute, that the DNR actually has the ability to determine its own benefits, and I'm wondering what the qualifications are for the people that go out and determine that. Are just because they work for the DNR, do they have any special training to determine those benefits, or those, you know, what the benefits should be?
Mr. Meyer, did he leave? He is not here. We will have to have that question unless there's someone prepared to answer that question. Thank you. If you'll state your name for the record and who you represent, and if you can answer Representative Green's question.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Paul Thielen. I'm the Wildlife Section Chief for DNR. And the question was, I think, what criteria are used or what's used to train our staff to determine benefits. And we're looking at the lands and determining where we think where our management benefits. So whether it's, I guess an example I could use would be where we farm the land through a cooperative farming agreement, where we plant food plots on the land. We get a drainage benefit in those cases, and we'd assign that as a positive value for drainage benefits. In other cases, our management might be for just general wildlife management purposes. We don't see any benefit from drainage in that situation, so we would not give it a positive benefit. Another example where we would agree to pay benefits would be where we have a wildlife impoundment exclusively managed for wildlife purposes, and there we'd pay a drainage benefit on that. So that's a couple of examples.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And here again, I'm probably going to stick my neck out to get it chopped off, but I wished I had that ability. You know, when I own a piece of land, I pay the property taxes on it for the benefit of everybody else around me, and there's certain people that get more benefit than I do, but I don't get to determine what my benefits are. I think this needs to be re-looked at. Thank you.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In response to the comment, I would just say that, again, the DNR operates under 84A as opposed to 103E, and there was discussion today on the differences there. The commissioner having the authority to determine what, you know, how much to participate in drainage benefits.
Representative Fabian moves House File 949 be recommended to pass, referred to Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Next one is a Fabian bill. Representative Fabian moves that House File 1021 be recommended to pass and referred to civil law. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. House File 1021, again, is another bill that deals with ditches. And in this case, it has to do with what we would refer to as minor ditch repairs. And, you know, there's been some situations that have occurred in northwestern Minnesota that the testifiers will address here. You know, in looking at the clock and so forth, I think I will suspend my opening comments and I will ask testifiers to come down.
All right. The testifiers from Kitson County, if you could please come down.
Rich Sanders is here from Polk County. Kelly Bengston from Kitson County is engineers, and then Leon Olson is a Kitson County County Commissioner. Thank you.
Welcome, each of you. As you come up to the microphone, state your name for the record, who you represent, and we'll make your comments brief, please.
Kelly Bengston, Kitson County Engineer. I'd like to thank the committee for asking us to come and testify to this bill. Kitson County has 363 miles of legal ditch in their drainage system. These require ongoing maintenance, as has been previously hinted to from Roseau and Marshall County on the previous bill's discussion. The maintenance, of course, is for the removal of silt, coming in from cropland, removal of brush and cattails, possible removal of other obstructions. Some of these ditches are under joint authority with Roseau County, as far as Kitsanau County is concerned. Costs for annual maintenance of our ditch systems ranges, depending on the year, from $20,000 to $75,000 per year. Typically, this work is bid out and it's performed on an hourly basis. If it's a large enough project, we will ask for bids on a cost for the entire project. Agriculture is a very high priority in our area. The counties in the Red River Valley are typically in the top 10 in tons of ag production in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is sixth in the nation in ag exports. So the maintenance of our drainage systems are extremely important to the state's economy as a whole, and especially Northwest Minnesota. When we do this work, we're obtaining permits if necessary. However, typically minor repair work doesn't require permits. We go in, we do not lower any culverts, we do not deepen the ditch, we do not change the cross section. We're just trimming the ditch back to its original construction. The Association of Minnesota Counties has reviewed this bill at their environmental committee meetings, and they also support this. I think Anna Lee is here, and if you wanted to speak to that, I think she's willing to do that. I think that's all I got at this point. I'll answer some questions later.
Thank you very much. To the next testifier.
Hello. My name is Richard Sanders, Polk County engineer, Kirkston, Minnesota. Polk County has 812 miles of legal drainage system. We've turned some back. We used to have over 900 miles. We've turned some back to the watershed. We've also abandoned some in the past within the Nature Conservancy land. Total benefited acres for all our ditch systems is 1,142,989 acres. It incorporates about 1,786 square miles. All our ditch system, the average benefit that our landowners are paying for our ditch system is $16.11 per acre in benefits. In 2010, we spent over $138,000 on doing ditch maintenance, weed spraying of our ditches, and beaver control. 2011 was $265,589, and in 2012, a little bit drier year, we were back in that $136,000 range. Polk County, because the landowners are the ones that own the ditches, they have to request for ditch maintenance to be done. We are just the managers of the system and the financer of the system. So they request it using the form that I attached to the packet. We also require that we spray our ditches for cattails and noxious weeds. We set up our county in four geographical areas, so we spray every fourth year. And then, you know, you're talking about protected wetlands and DNR property. Whenever we do any ditch cleaning, any ditch maintenance along or near a protected wetland or DNR property, we contact them, let them know what our intentions are, get their approval, and continue on with our process. As part of the packet, there was a nice little graph that I attached that actually shows the amount of miles of ditch that we've cleaned, the amount of beaver that we've trapped out of our ditches, and the amount of miles of cattails that we have sprayed since 2001.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Fabian, line 1.8 and 1.9 says, minor ditches, minor repairs to ditches undertaken by a drainage authority are not civil, subject to civil actions under 116B.03. What I'd like to hear is some testimony, not about how much it costs to take care of the ditches and all of those different things, which your testifiers in the past bill did, but I'd like to know why that this is necessary on line 1.8 and 1.9. If we could focus on that rather than how many miles we have and how those types of things, it would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Engineer Bengston is going to address that at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. In 2006, Kitson County moved forward after a ditch inspection on the State Ditch 72 system, which is a joint ditch with Roseau County. It was inspected with the engineers and a couple of county commissioners, which involved the entire drainage authority group. They had been requested to clean the ditch out by some people that were paying ditch tax. The ditch serves cropland in both counties. It passes through state lands, and this became the issue, passing through the state lands, that particular location. The county drainage authority decided to proceed with a clean out of 14 miles of ditch in this system. The clean out cost was done at a total of $55,075. We had been in contact with the DNR on this. There had been some discussions going on about this particular project. They stated that we could maintain our ditches. After the work was done, the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy had been in contact with the DNR, and they decided to file a lawsuit against the Drainage Authority for damaging the environment. The Minnesota County Insurance Trust decided to take over the case. They appointed their attorneys to handle the case, and after about 2 years, it was settled out of court. The out-of-court settlement involved putting most of the dirt back into the ditch. And if you take a look at the handout, you'll see this photograph. This is a trim job, more or less, when we're maintaining our ditches. It's nothing major.
I'm not certain we have that handout.
Okay.
At least I don't have it here right close by.
We can get those out to you. I think your copy of the pictures are black and whites, but on this original, it's a color photo. But to continue on, most of the dirt was, as part of the settlement, most of the dirt that had been trimmed out of the ditch, containing brush and a few beaver dams, had to be put back into the ditch as part of the settlement. And when you add up the costs to the MCIT for covering Kitson and Roseau County for their attorney fees, and then the county's time for the engineer's office in both Kitson and Roseau County, the contractor was also sued. Their time, their attorney, was covered by the Farmers Union. The grand total, approximately $1.2 million. So we would like to see your support for this bill to prevent this from happening in the future. We're just trying to maintain our ditches and do minor maintenance work as requested by the people paying ditch tax to help promote agriculture.
Okay, do you have your further testifier? Representative Fabian.
My name is Leon Olson. I'm a commissioner from Kitson County, and it's my job as a commissioner to maintain these ditches, and but right now, to get somebody to maintain our ditches, they won't come because we're all worried about lawsuits. It cost our local excavator, a pile of money from his insurance company to get this done. So that's all I guess I got to say.
Thank you very much. But Mr. Strand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Strand. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCA is a public interest environmental law office here in St. Paul. It was founded in 1974. I'm also currently the chair of the board of directors of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, which is an umbrella organization of 75 Minnesota environmental and conservation groups. I'm testifying today in opposition to House File 1021. This bill would exempt a new category of so-called minor repairs to drainage systems from the scope of the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act, Minnesota Statutes, Chapter 116B. There are three reasons why we oppose the bill. Number one, because it rolls back the protections of MIRA, the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act. Second, it would pose a serious threat to our ability to protect wetlands in this state. And third, the bill subverts the stakeholder processes which we have in place to try to address issues of drainage and wetlands in a way that gets all of the various interests acknowledged. So reason number one, we're opposed to the bill because it rolls back MIRA, the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act. MIRA is one of the core foundation bedrock elements of Minnesota environmental law. It was adopted in 1971, and it's proven to be a critical tool for protecting the environment in Minnesota. What MIRA does is it gives citizens access to the courts to enforce environmental standards, rules, permits, licenses, agreements, or stipulation agreements, and to stop pollution, impairment, or destruction of Minnesota's natural resources. What we found over the past 42 years is that state agencies and local governments do not always enforce the law. And what MIRA does is it provides a way for Minnesota's citizens to step into the breach. Our organizations oppose any rollback of MIRA, and this is one that we certainly would oppose. On this issue, we think the citizens of Minnesota are very clearly with us. In January of 2013, a bipartisan research team conducted 500 telephone interviews of Minnesota registered voters. And fully two-thirds of those voters believe that Minnesota's environmental laws should be toughened or better enforced, not relaxed. 7 in 10 of those registered voters expressed concern about legislative rollbacks of law to protect the environment. The people of the state do not want environmental protections like MIRA rolled back. Second reason for opposition is that this bill would do damage to our ability to protect wetlands. Up in the Red River Valley, we've lost 90% of our wetlands over the past many years. Because of that, we have poor flood control, we have more water pollution, we have enormous losses in wildlife habitat. The reason we've lost all those wetlands is because of drainage. This bill would blow a hole, really, in the ability of the Wetland Conservation Act, or WACA, to stop drainage projects in the state that damage wetlands. Now, the bill's proponents say that it would just exempt small projects. But small projects, say unplugging a single culvert, can sometimes can damage a wetland severely. And lots of small projects added together certainly can have a dramatic cumulative impact. So without MIRA, citizens lose the ability to stop those kinds of unlawful projects. And government units know that if they fail to take action, they won't be held accountable. Third reason for opposition is that this bill does an end run around the stakeholder processes that are in place now to address these kinds of issues. The drainage work group is one. The Wetland Conservation Act stakeholder process put in place by Governor Dayton's executive order near the end of last session is another. We certainly acknowledge that there's a need for the legislature to continue to address the problem of reconciling legitimate drainage interests with the commitment to no net loss of wetlands. Piecemeal exemptions like this, though, from our basic environmental protections are the wrong way to do that. The right way to address those issues is to work through the processes we've already established, systems that will engage all of the affected interests, and those processes should be respected. Now, there was some testimony about a particular case that we were involved in with Kitson and Roseau Counties and the Joint Drainage Authority. And if I could get the help from a page, I'd like to pass around a handout that summarizes the facts of that case. It was a relatively straightforward case. The Joint Drainage Authority, Kitson and Roseau Counties, started doing some work in the ditches. Yeah, they didn't get the necessary permits from the DNR. They didn't get the necessary permits from the Army Corps of Engineers. The DNR issued 5 separate cease and desist orders. The Army Corps of Engineers issued a notice of potential violations. Counties did not respond to that. The next logical step would have been for the DNR to commence an enforcement action under their authority. They chose not to do so, and that's where MIRA came into play. That's where the citizens of Minnesota and our organization went to court, as has been our right for more than 40 years, to try to get the law enforced. And we ultimately did reach a settlement agreement where as much of the damage to the wetlands could be restored as possible was accomplished. So I hope that you'll take a look at the fact sheet. That gives you the facts of the case, I think. that should give you a good picture of exactly what happened in that particular case. You know, almost every one of our environmental laws, federal and state, contain a citizen suit provision. If you look at the federal laws, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, the Superfund Law, all have citizen suit provisions that allow citizens to go in to enforce the law when the government doesn't. MIRA is the Minnesota equivalent of all of those statutory provisions. And I think if you look at the, when you look at the cases, 45 years now of modern environmental law, you'll find that almost all the development of the law has happened in cases that have been brought by citizens. They haven't happened in cases brought by the government. The development of the law has happened in the cases that have been brought by the citizens. At least three quarters of the reported cases in this area were initiated that way. It's a critical tool for assuring that our environmental laws are adequately enforced. And it's one that I don't think this committee or this legislature should take a decision to start carving out exemptions to it lightly.
Thank you, Mr. Tran. Ms. Garlett. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. A few years ago, the Association of Minnesota Counties did adopt a position in support of this particular bill. We do agree that people need to do this right. Counties have a lot of rules to follow when it comes to ditches. And when they do follow them properly, we are looking for a little bit of guidance here when it comes to these repairs. We do have a requirement on us as counties, as the drainage authority, to go out and do maintenance and do these repairs on ditches. And so we do think that it's important to provide some sort of a clarity for this so that we can do the work on, for the benefit of the people that are dependent on the drainage that the ditches provide. I think in the interest of time, I'll stand for any questions, but I just wanted to be on the record to let people know that AMC is supportive of this, and I'll just kind of defer if there's any questions. We do have the experts here, and I don't need to repeat a lot of what they said.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer. Mr. Meyer, can you give us the scoop on this from the department's perspective?
Mr. Chairman, members, the bill as it stands, we understand the concerns that people have, but if these things are done the right way, there should be no issues. I mean, the issues that the department has been involved with was concerns about circumstances that arose as the cleanout was occurring or after the cleanout. So I guess we do have some concerns about exempting activities from civil action, because you know, if people follow the rules that are there, there should be no need to follow up with civil action to begin with.
Questions for Mr. Meyer? Rick Kapanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, do you have the MCA handout, or have you seen this? In front of
Mr.
you?
Mr. Chairman, not this one. I've seen a different one. Yes, I have seen this. I'm familiar with this issue.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, so is the timeline relating to legal action correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, from the fall of 2007 to December 2010, are you referring to?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, I'm looking at March 2005 through November 2010, that portion.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I did not work directly on this issue, but I know during these time frames these activities were going on. I would assume that this timeline is correct.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer and I think members of the committee, this is a huge bill. This is driving a huge hole into our environmental protections. It's we shouldn't do this. This is a bad bill. And you know, I see here a whole timeline of action, and then somebody got caught. somebody got caught for doing the wrong thing, and now they're here wanting to change the law. And as I mentioned on the earlier drainage bill, we all pay. We all pay for these drainage issues. We pay with flood damage mitigation. We pay for wetland restoration. And these facts are correct, as Mr. Meyer indicated. We have a lot of correspondence going back and forth, and somebody decided to go ahead and clean out the ditch anyway. And now they're seeking legislative. They tried judicial relief, and I see the Supreme Court declined to review, and now they're trying for legislative relief, and I don't think they should get it.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I'm curious about the opportunities for public input in your area when there is ditch repair.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I'll have Mr. Bankston address that for you, okay?
Welcome back to the committee. You could address the matter and do it somewhat briefly.
Thank you. Kelly Bankston, Kissing County Engineer. I think there's a little confusion. This did not go to the Supreme Court. This was not a court settlement. And we've got documentation from the discovery part of the court case as it was building. It never actually went to court, of course, but there was correspondence between the DNR and the MCEA group in December or November of 2006. Okay, on the public input for maintaining ditches, the ditch authority had been contacted by landowners who farm in the area of this ditch system, so the ditch was then inspected, and that's why the clean out was proceeding.
Representative
Johnson. Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, my question is more general, and it actually points to a case that happened just in the last couple of weeks in Blue Earth County, outside my district, but very near it, where, again, it's a different kind of a ditch system because there is a slope, and the idea was to protect the lake. And citizens were really quite satisfied because they had impact into the way the ditch was being repaired and to protect during construction for silt running into one of the lakes in the area. And my point being that where there's effective public input and public hearing on even ditch repairs, maybe some of this conflict can be avoided, and so I'm questioning about, in general, is there valid opportunity for public input into these processes?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. So your question is that what kind of public input do you have in the process leading up to the ditch repair?
Prior to the repair, yep.
So when it's announced that we're going to be doing this project, and I'll have Mr. Bankston address that.
Typically, the minor repair work does not have an official public notification process. That's more with a ditch improvement process or ditch establishment process or an extension of an outlet. So the minor repair work, the documentation comes in with correspondence to one of the county commissioners on the ditch authority or the county engineer's office or the ditch inspector's office. And the ditch is inspected in the field, and the determination is made by the ditch authority whether or not to go ahead and do some work in that ditch system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, maybe Commissioner Bankston, and sorry, I think I referred to the earlier testifier. I thought you were because you were on the list. Sorry. Engineer Bankston, I'm just curious, in this project, you actually did go to bids. I think it was 50-some thousand between the two. So are you required to go to bids when it's 50,000 or more?
Mr. Bankston.
The current statute is $100,000.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bankston, so this would, the bill then would be for work that's under $100,000. Is that the way you would interpret it?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Arnosky.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Arnosti. I represent Audubon members statewide. I won't take a lot of time, but I would absolutely request that you oppose this. We have found that environmental laws are most effective when they're enforced. Sometimes it's politically very difficult for state agencies and government to do the right thing. The Minnesota Environmental Rights Act has been on the books for more than a generation, and citizen enforcement works. Ultimately, the courts decide whether these are good cases, and in this case, the court decided that the citizens were right, the law needed to be enforced, and we ask you to maintain that ability of citizens to protect their resources by not allowing this exemption. Thank you.
Anyone else to testify for or against the bill? There being none, Representative Fabian changes his motion to lay the bill over for possible consideration. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
The next House file is House File 1300. It's Representative Anzell's bill, and the chair will move House File 1300 recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm joined at the table by Mr. Michael Twite, who is the environmental manager for a new mining company doing business on the iron ore formation in northeastern Minnesota, a company called Magnetation. First of all, in light of some conversations I've had during the day, let me tell you what operations this bill does not affect. First of all, it does not affect frack sand mining. Secondly, it does not affect existing taconite pellet production at any existing mining facility in northeastern Minnesota on the Mesabi. And thirdly, it does not affect any proposed, real, imagined, or otherwise dreamed of non-ferrous mining operation on the periphery of the Boundary Waters canoe area. What it does pertain to is scram mining. Magnetation is a very successful company of Iron Range.
Manzel, could you tell them what scram mining is?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try. There are a couple of different variations of the definition. I'll give you the definition of my father, who was a hard rock iron ore miner in the mid-1930s and 40s. He would say the Oliver Mining Company, the Big Shots, now known as U.S. Steel, would come in with their power and their might and their money and take the cream of the ore, take the easily to get to ore, the ore that would reap them the biggest profit, and then they would scram. They would leave. And various and assorted hodgepodge of small companies, mainly located in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, would come to the Iron Range and take what was left. What's different about this scram mining company is that for the first time in our history, we have real Iron Range entrepreneurs actually inventing the process of reclaiming iron ore units from tailings basins, which were waste materials from the natural ore mines of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Now, the bill pertains to fugitive dust. It does not pertain to emissions from stacks. When you think of emissions from stacks, we think of course, taconite pellet plants, coal-fired power plants, and paper plants.
a good example of fugitive dust would be the dust that's kicked up by a haulage truck taking a load of refined, cleansed hematite with a little bit of magnetite in it to the Jesse loadout in Coleraine for shipment to Mexico for a steelmaking operation. Our problem for this company is that federal rule and state rule do not comport. State rule is more restrictive in this regard with fugitive dust. Federal rule is least or less restrictive. The company is concerned that should the rule become enforceable, we would be back into an air permit process, a process that could make it even more difficult for this company to continue to expand. This company is operating at three sites, employing nearly 300 people in northeastern Minnesota who did not have jobs prior to this development, and they are contemplating at least two more of these scram mining operations where they clean tailings basins, clean already mined ore for shipment to steelmaking facilities. That's basically the bill, and Mr. Twight is here to assist if the committee has any questions of a technical basis.
Representative Van Zelden, so you're telling me that this bill will enhance the benefit of having old iron ore rejected material that's either in piles, mountains, tailings pits, along roads, things that were rejected by the scram miners of the early part of the century, and they were actually doing something good, as well as making steel and benefiting the fact that we have washing machines and cars and things of that nature. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that softball. That was very, very helpful. The answer is yes, and the bill directs the PCA to modify its rule with regard to fugitive dust, and all those wonderful things that you mentioned will happen. Overburden and underburden will be further utilized for the making of steel.
Mr. Twight, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Mr. Chair, committee members, first of all, thank you for hearing me this afternoon. My name is Michael Twight. I'm the environmental manager for Magnetation Incorporated. We're based out of Grand Rapids. The goal of this bill relates to our current scram mining operations. In Minnesota's MPCA regulations, there are various levels of state-only required air emission permits. I have MPCA permits for water disposal, I have DNR permits for mining, I have a plethora of regulatory permits now. But the challenge we are faced with is that under the current state rule, and specifically this current definition, the potential dust emissions from our haul trucks running in between our tailings basins and our processing plant has to be included in the definition of if yet another permit is required. That's under one portion of Minnesota state MPCA regulations. Under another portion, a different type of state-only permit, fugitive dust emissions are explicitly excluded. So what we're requesting is that this definition is modified to exclude fugitive dusts from a state-only permit, and it removes a great amount of ambiguity, not only on the part of an operation such as Magnetation, but it has potential impacts for other small businesses where their only potential emissions rather could be fugitive. For example, some agricultural operations could be pulled into yet a permit. So we view this really as trying to eliminate what I perceive as an unintended consequence of the way the definition is written.
Thank you very much. And So that was going to be my first question is, so a farmer who is routinely going taking a loaded truck between his farm site or a field site and an elevator, I've witnessed many times the dust coming off the tires. Is that the similar kind of thing you're referring to, Mr. Twight?
Mr. Chair, committee members, yes, sir, that's exactly it. As a farmer, all farmers are small businesses, whether it, you know, however they're organized. But they still, as a potentially regulated party, those businesses have to show the due diligence to prove that a permit is not required or to obtain a permit from the regulatory agencies, whether it's magnetation or a farm or whomever. There are many types of processes that would require you to have a permit regardless of this fugitive question. As Mr. Anzell had stated, you know, your typical smokestack operations, whether it's a drying process or bag houses or a number of other reasons where you'd have to get a permit regardless of this definition. We're in a unique situation, as would a farmer or could a farmer be, that our only source are these potential fugitives.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I probably had the question answered, but you always enjoy listening to Representative Anzell in his discussion. But so, Representative, we're just talking about dust from trucks. We're not talking about the reprocessing of these tailings and all that kind of thing. Is that all this is about?
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, that's correct.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanting to make sure there's no unintended consequences of this. I thought that the potential for fugitive dust off the trucks was part of the issue with the frac sand mining. So how do I know that this doesn't somehow enable that to slip through the cracks?
Mr. Chair, committee members, ma'am, I am not an expert on frac sands. I'll be the first to tell you that. But whenever you have a number of drying operations in a non-metallic mineral processing plant, which frac sands is a type of non-metallic mineral processing, those types of operations, a drying operation, for example, would drive them to an air permit regardless of fugitive dusts. They have various types of point sources that could, and other permitting requirements that would take them to an air permit as opposed to just solely a fugitive dust operation.
We have the PCA coming up at this moment to answer some of these questions. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, Jeff Smith. I'm the director of the Industrial Division at the MPCA. To answer the question about the frac sand issue, that's the trigger for a frac sand air permit is based on whether they have dryers, whether they're drying sand and shipping it out. Once you've got that, then you're into the permitting process. And once you're into the permitting process, then we do consider things like the way that trucks move around the site. So dust generated from the trucks at the facility would be considered fugitive dust. They're on their trip to and from other places to the facility is not part of the permitting process for the air permits.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Questions, other questions? Anyone to testify for? Oh, Representative Buchel, sorry.
Just one quick question. Are any of the, thank you, Mr. Chair, are any of the mines that you're working at close to residential areas at this point in time?
Mr. Toy.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Buchel. Scram mining is not real. It isn't a mine what I think that most people think we're thinking.
Right.
Like when you drive through Eveleth and you see those big mine. That's not the same kind of thing. That being said, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I grew up in a mining location right next to the pit. The mining companies created all of the communities along the iron ore formation. Right. And they created them in close proximity to the mines so the miners could get to work on foot. Consequently, the concentrate that magnetation is reclaiming went out a pipe from what was called a washing plant in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, basically prior to the Taconite Amendment. And those tailings went out far beyond the communities. Those tailings are now 50, 60, 75 feet deep with iron ore concentrate. And what magnetation does is they extract the concentrate that was previously mined, they clean it one more time, and they send it away to make steel. It's a reclamation.
Mr. Chair, yeah, and I think that's just a absolute wonderful thing. I have traveled extensively on Da Range and been up there numerous times, so I do know what you're talking about, and I think this reclamation of this valuable mineral and getting rid of some of those large areas is a very, very good thing. And as far as fugitive dust goes, I mean, that varies too. You have a rainy day, you don't have any fugitive dust. And I think really the range has been very familiar with dust for many, many years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Uglum. And anyone to testify for or against the bill in the audience? There being none, Representative Ansdells renews his motion that House File 13. I renew my motion. Sorry about that. The chair removes my motion. House File 1300 recommended to pass, referred to government operations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Manziel.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, everyone.
The next item up on the agenda is House File 1028. Representative Loeffner, Representative Wagenius moves House File 1028 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Loeffner, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Delighted to be here. House File 1028 deals with the unique situation in Hennepin County and our Soil and Water Conservation District. Hennepin is a unique place. Sometimes that's a real advantage and sometimes it's a disadvantage, and in that it includes 25% of the state's population. And as a result, we have found that it has been difficult for our local Soil and Water Conservation District to have any ability to have its members actively engage in campaigning so voters know who they're voting for and what the candidates are and their qualifications, or even worse, get any publicity about its work so that people even understand what it does. Before I was elected, and I was an election judge, and the number of complaints we get of trying to pick names when you don't know what it's for or how. And this year I got calls from people who were filling out absentee ballots, and I couldn't help them get any information at that time about the candidates that were there. At the same time, the environment is really important to our community, and I wouldn't be bringing this bill forward if Hennepin County hadn't been doing a lot of work with Bowser and others in the intervening years to make sure that there's no lag in attention to our environment. And so I want to first of all say I really admire the people who have stepped up and have done, you know, their best. Many of them bring professional qualifications that are useful. Sometimes we've had, let's just say, name picking that didn't always work as well as we had hoped. But it worked the way it did. This bill would provide that the county would take over the responsibilities, if the Bowser Board agrees, of the Soil and Water Conservation District, and be responsible for those responsibilities with accountability built into the bill. So not only does Bowser approve, but they have the ability to retract it and reestablish the Soil and Water Conservation District Board at any time. The county has been performing many of these duties, some under contract with the Soil and Water Conservation, and it has district, and it has a high commitment to protecting our natural environment and waters. And we have a list that we can hand out, that Paige could hand out to you, of what the county has been doing lately in that area. Also, it's important for you to know that all of Hennepin County is covered by 11 watershed management organizations. These watershed organizations are much more visible and connected to the communities than the Soil and Water Conservation District. For example, I know who even some of the staff of the one that serves my area. I've been to their activities. They're much more visible because they're locally connected. And I've gotten letters from a couple of them endorsing this. There isn't any unorganized territory, in other words, like you might have in other counties, where you need a countywide organization to look out for those interests. And so that's basically the bill. I have with me Rosemary Lavin from Hennepin County Environmental Services, who can answer more detailed questions. But that's the essence of the bill. It allows the Hennepin County Board to take over those responsibilities with the approval of Bowser and retaining accountability for accomplishment.
Welcome to the committee, and if you keep comments short, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. Rosemary Lavin, I'm Assistant Director with Hennepin County Environmental Services. And I will just be very brief because Representative Loeffler did cover a lot of the comments that I would have made. And I just wanted to emphasize that this bill would provide the opportunity for Hennepin County to petition Bowser. Bowser would have the approval of the petition to transfer the duties to Hennepin County. This is compromise language that we developed in working directly with Bowser. And again, it's for Hennepin County only. The Soil and Water Conservation District model works very well in other parts of the state, but it's not the most effective model for Hennepin County citizens and our local governments. And again, this is a very unique situation. Hennepin County has been delivering the bulk of conservation services since 2003 through my department, the Environmental Services Department. And then since 2007, we've delivered the rest of the statutory remaining, or the statutory connected duties through a cooperative agreement with the Conservation District. And in your packets, you do have the Bowser Board action that came from December of 2012, which directed Bowser staff to work with the county on the development of this language that you have before you in the bill. Again, this change just provides a way to ensure that the mission and the goals of the conservation statute are carried out in Hennepin County, and that there's the continued use of the alternative service delivery model that we've come up with that's very established in Hennepin County. Thank you.
Testifiers Lord, Strong, and Garlitz, if you could please come forward. Introduce yourself for the record and as well, a couple of minutes maximum.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Richard B. Strong. I'm 4th District Supervisor, Hennepin County Conservation District. I have to tell you, I'm a little surprised that I, as elected official, to come here to testify in front of another elected official that a non-elected official board has the power to put us out of business. It befuddles me, frankly. Since there's an existing process in Minnesota Statute 103C that allows the boarders to dissolve the conservation district, you set this up. I'm not sure why you wouldn't follow that. There has been a referendum in Hennepin County in 2002 where 74% of the electorate decided to keep our district and not dissolve it. So I'm wondering why we just don't follow that process. Hennepin County initiated that referendum and lost. Last year, Hennepin County was here to say that they could elect to put us out of business. This year, they have taken a proxy through Bowser to put us out of business. I'm not sure why you would even consider such a motion. Also, would it be good government for one elected official board to put another elected official board out of business? I was elected duly as a representative of the Soil and Water Conservation District in Hennepin County. I expect to fulfill my obligations there. I think providing an exemption for one county would make it difficult for other counties not to do the same thing. We just had a testimony about a ditching where counties and cities have a very difficult time doing the right thing. We are a citizen board that was only concerned about water quality and environmental issues within all of Hennepin County. I realize we have county commissioners that have districts and maybe have some other concerns that they might want to take into consideration. So with that, I will conclude my comments.
Thank you. Go ahead with introduce yourself and let's hear your comments, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Chris Lord. I'm the district manager of the Anoka County Soil Water Conservation District. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. If I could get a little help from a page, perhaps I could have a handout that could go around. A few things I just want to touch off on quickly, I'll try to be brief, is that it is true that voters have a hard time knowing who they're voting for. I'd say with the advent of the internet, that needn't be the case anymore. The Hennepin Conservation District was defunded immediately following the referendum to maintain them. All of them, the county stripped away all of their money. And so you have a board working on a shoestring budget, trying to get things done. And even with that, over the last 10 years, I consider them an important partner, and that's why we're here. We're also concerned about the precedent. Also, the way the language is written in statute, it really doesn't give Bowser the option to say no. This is not a bill to get a petition to allow Bowser to discontinue them. The language says that, and I'll read it here, I think it's... that the Board of Water and Soil Resources, this is at 1.20 to 1.24, if the Board of Water and Soil Resources determines that progress toward the goals identified, and there's about nine goals, one of which is tax-based protection, can be achieved without HCD, then they must approve the petition. Wildlife preservation's one. So theoretically, and I'll bring a point to absurdity just to make the point, if Boy Scouts put up wood duck houses and thereby achieve, make progress toward the goal of wildlife preservation, then there's no need for HCD. And so the language of this bill really puts the onus on, well, I don't know how Bowser could possibly say no. Even if the Hennepin Conservation District were determined to be an effective organization doing great things, the question is, can progress be made without them? Well, theoretically, progress can be made without Hennepin County Environmental Services. Progress could be made without any of the watershed entities that we have, without MPCA, without DNR, without any organization. So the language of the bill currently is extremely concerning to our board. The other thing is just talking about visibility of the district and the Hennepin County Environmental Services. And I do partner with the Environmental Services, they've got great staff. But if you look at websites, I tried to find out the projects that they were doing, and I compared the Environmental Services website, and it's embedded within the counties, compared to all of the other metro stormwater conservation districts, which I think are anecdotal to what Hennepin Conservation District might be today had they not lost all their funding 10 years ago. And it's startling. And I did send out an email to all the members earlier just encouraging you to take a look at that. And I would please, please ask you not to approve this. This is a frightening precedent. It is a precedent. My board saying, you know, one elected group take away the election results of another is frightening enough. Also, it doesn't cost Hennepin County anything right now to have this district in existence. The state provides a modest stipend. The supervisors at Hennepin Conservation District have waived their per diem. You don't get rich and you don't get powerful by being a stormwater district supervisor. You get the opportunity to influence natural resource management. So 99 out of 100 times the people who run for stormwater supervisor have honorable intentions. I've never been worried about who might win the election for my board, because I know even if I get, forgive the phrase, a wingnut on my board, that happens all over in government. But I know it'll only be one of five supervisors, and we'll weather through it, and we'll be fine. It might be a bunch of 4-to-1 votes, but they do good work, and I'm so grateful that I have a board that is elected, that's responsive to the taxpayer, and that honestly, we're a small government, we can react quickly. If we find out about an opportunity coming up next month, my board can have an emergency meeting. We can act on it. We can discuss it. We can have committee meetings. We can pull together a plan and put out a grant application to seize opportunities for my electorate. I don't know how possible that is in a large county government structure, and that's something that Richard Strong and his group can actually do as well. The one other example in the state of Minnesota where the county defunded its soil and water district, what they did is they actually kept the soil and water district as an advisory council to help direct those staff on the county board that are on the county department that do these things. Thereby, they have the benefits of the locally elected county board or county soil water district, and integration, maybe loss of some of that administrative duplicity. So I think that might be a better option in this case, and it's something that I would hope that Hennepin County would consider instead of establishing such a frightening precedent. Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you very much, and will you two hang close there for a minute. I want to ask, is anyone else here who would like to testify for or against the bill? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, honorable members. My name is Mark Zabel. I am the current president of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts and elected supervisor from the Carver County SWCD. The association opposes this legislation. Our main objection is to the precedent that would be set. As spoken to earlier, and I just want to reiterate, the precedent, although identified for Hennepin County only in this bill, could easily be picked up and put forward by other counties as they deem. And the precedent takes away that opportunity for a referendum and a vote by the people in the district to determine how they want to be governed. So that is our main objection. And the low threshold is also a concern. Rather than the reverse being the case, where we have a high threshold for the elimination, this is a very low threshold for the elimination. So I have other comments, but I will withhold those because I can see that you are pressed for time. I will respect that, and thank you for your time to listen to me.
Thank you for that, but I think that we are going to spend the time necessary to get into this bill if members have questions on the bill. So members with questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members and to the testifiers. This is a difficult bill, but Mr. Chair, I was on the Dakota SWCD when the, shall I call it, high level of dysfunction was going on with the Hennepin Conservation District. And the testifiers are correct that the county de facto has defunded, and it has for some time. This isn't a recent issue. The county has absorbed the tasks, and the employees now work for the county. And they were very good employees. They were known around the state for their work, highly professional, but now they are and they have been for many years working for Hennepin County. So the status quo is that we, the state, provides the money that goes to the Hennepin Conservation District, and then they can apply for grants or other things. And as to the issue of precedent, so this bill is here with Hennepin County. If another county was coming forward, they would have to make their case in front of this committee and our future legislators. So it's not just that it's going to happen with other counties. They'd have to come and make their case. And I don't think there's going to be another county coming forward, at least looking into the future, wanting to make that case. But they would have to make that case to the legislature at this time. I think Hennepin County has made the case. And it's unfortunate. It's difficult. But we often talk about the multi-layers and multi-levels of water management. And here we have a county, county commissioners elected, and we have the Soil and Water District commissioners elected. And the county commissioners have made the decision not to fund. So I think we should follow that local decision and allow this to proceed.
Okay, I didn't hear a question in that, Representative Purcell, but thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I'm not quite sure who to, but I'll put the question out there and decide. Up north, we got situations where the SWCDs are, I won't say they haven't been disbanded, but they're part of the county. As similar to, I think, what Representative Hansen just described. And the only thing I see different here is that you're looking to disband the board, and that there would no longer be elections for the board in under this bill. Is that correct?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Purcell. That's correct. This would discontinue the election of an independent board. Those responsibilities would be accountable to the Hennepin County commissioners, who are also elected and accountable.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm a little bit concerned about the precedent, too, and that I know we've got a couple of counties where SWCD and County Environmental Services are working pretty good together. You know, and there's always a funding issue, and that's what kind of came to a head up there. But I'm a little concerned about the precedent too, and evidently folks have tried to work together and it hasn't worked. I guess that's I'm just speculating here what's happened. But you answer my question. Thank you.
Representative Ugo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm kind of in the unique position where I represent Hennepin County and part of Anoka County. So, but I also do feel that this is kind of a unique situation here. My question is to Representative Loeffler. The Hennepin County Board was behind this, what, almost 100% on this deal, wasn't it?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Uglin. I know it was passed by them. I haven't heard of any disagreement at all. I wasn't there when they voted, but it's part of their official program.
Representative Uglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
well,
I'm told by staff that's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, this is really about streamlining government, and I don't see it. I see Hennepin County as being unique. I mean, outstate counties and things like that, a little different story, but most people, when they go to the polls, they certainly don't know who they're voting for here, but they do know who they're voting for when it comes down to a Hennepin County commissioner. And there's no lack of accountability on those persons' parts. So I don't think there's a lack of representation here. I think it's a streamlining of government. And Hennepin County is unique because of the Environmental Services Division, very well staffed, very, very expertise on this. So I think this makes sense for Hennepin County. I don't know if it would make sense for Anoka County or Kitson County or any other county, but at this point in time, I think it makes good sense for Anoka. Thank you.
Any other questions by the committee or questions of any testifier by this committee? There being none, Representative Wagenius renews her motion for House File 1028. Pardon me? Representative Wagenius renews her motion for House File 1028 to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Next item on the agenda, if the price is right, is Representative Hackbarth moves House File 1057 to be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Environment, Natural Resources, and Agricultural Finance Committee. Representative Hackbarth, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of amendments. If we could move the amendments and get in the shape I'd like.
All right. We'll take the A1 amendment first. Representative Hackbarth moves the 1057 A1. In favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Now the A2 amendment, the 1057 A2, is moved by Representative Hackbarth. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is now in the shape that the author desires it to be, House File 1057. Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. This is an all-terrain vehicle bill. It's brought to us by the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. And with me today, I have the president of ATVAM, George Radke, with me to answer any questions that you may have. It's four sections to the bill. The first section has to do with a voluntary contribution program that we're going to put in place, and the one amendment, the larger amendment, addresses that issue as well. And we adopted that not only for ATVs in the amendment, but also for snowmobiles and off-road motorcycles, etc. Then in Section 2, it sets up a free registration weekend. Section 2 is for maybe you have a farm license ATV, or you're from out of state and you don't have your vehicle registered to ride on the trails. This creates a weekend designated by the commissioner for a free riding on Grattan Aid trails for one weekend out of the year. Section 3 is a has two parts to it. It has to do with the ATV safety certificate. This would include require people up to the age of 17, and including the age of 17, that they have to have the on-hands training. Right now, if you're, over 14?
If you're 16 and over.
If you're 16 and over, you don't have to take the hands-on. This says that 16 and 17-year-olds will also have to have the hands-on training. And then it also exempts 12 and 15-year-olds from the driver's license requirement for riding in the ditch. And Mr. Radke can explain that a little bit after I'm through. And then also on Section 4, it has a driving in the road ditch right-of-ways. And Mr. Radke can explain that as well, Mr. Chairman. So we stand for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Radke, do you have something you'd like to add to Representative Hackbar's description of House File 1057?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is George Radke. I'm the president of the All-Terrain Vehicle Association, and I'm here speaking for ATV owners in the state of Minnesota today. One of the issues being is that we were looking at to be able to have children between the ages of 12 to 16 years of age to be able to operate with supervision, and only with supervision, as long as they have an ATV safety certificate in the road right-of-way. Same as basically what is allowed with a snowmobile today. Actually, it's more restrictive. With snowmobiles today, it's basically once you're 14 years of age, you can basically drive a snowmobile in a road ditch without any supervision. We want to maintain that supervision until at least the age of 16 years of age when they have a valid driver's license. Part of this is, and what it comes down to, is family riding. It's very difficult in the state of Minnesota when you're using road ditches, especially for connectors with trails, when you hit a road ditch and you have your children with you who legally can ride on the trails, but they no longer can continue riding with you and following you because you hit a road ditch. Okay. One of the other provisions that we were talking about was to be able to continue with safety. Safety programs in the state of Minnesota, I think the DNR has actually proven that they work, and I think that even with ATV safety, we are proving that it does work. We're educating both parents and children, and we're getting them riding together. Our parents are actually being educated by our children for those that aren't educated today. So it is working. It's working immensely. Did anybody have any specific questions about these provisions?
We'll get to that in just a moment. Anyone to testify for or against the bill? There being none, now questions for Mr. Radke or the author. Representative Guinness.
Just a matter of process, Mr. Chair. I didn't hear where you were referring this bill to.
This bill is going to your committee, Representative Guinness.
I think that is appropriate, except for one thing. When we adopted A2, A1 is clearly goes to the Finance Committee, but it does seem to me that A2 needs a stop in the Transportation Committee because it's talking about the bank slope or ditch of a public road right-of-way of a trunk highway.
One moment, please. Why don't we go, while we're figuring this out for a moment here, why don't we go to questions? Are there questions by the members on the bill, irrespective of Representative Boginius's comment? There being none, we'll recess for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. I'm just, I'm not for or against the COI. I just don't want it to miss the deadline. That's all.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I understand completely. Yeah.
I was actually trying to not let it be, okay?
I mean, that's just the option. I can talk to the transportation.
I only brought it up because if they want it, it kills it. So you truth will out, huh?
Do we have a match change today?
Do we? No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, we got our bill done.
All right. I just assumed that I'm going to be here every Tuesday night. So.
No, I, well, from now on? Yeah.
Yeah.
But not tonight. No, we were not supposed to do anything because of policy committees.
Okay. I just got really used to working.
Okay, I should use this time to give Tony Cuelas my amendment. Good reminder, I should take my stuff with me.
Yeah.
Now, good luck distracting me from
TV. We'll reconvene the committee. Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, the A2 amendment that we've adopted would actually, I think, make the bill less likely that transportation would want to see it, because originally the bill had allowed riding on the extreme right hand of the trunk highway, whereas the amendment takes that away, and now they'd be on the bank slope or ditch of the public road right away. So if the transportation committee didn't want to see it prior to the amendment, I don't think this it would change.
Questions on to Ms. Taylor? Being none, were there any further questions by the members of Representative Hackbarth on the bill? There being none, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion. House File 1057, as amended, be recommended, passed, and referred to the Environment, Natural Resources, and Ag Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius, House File 1100. Representative Wagenius moves House File 1100, and she has some numerous amendments to House File 1100. Representative Wagenius, we will take the A1 amendment first. Representative Wagenius moves the A1 amendment. In favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Then the A2 amendment.
Let's make sure we have the right amendment here. We're going to use the A4 amendment instead.
Okay, I don't have that in my packet. Do we have? Oh, we're bringing it around. So we are not going to be using the A2. We'll use the A4 instead.
Yes.
Okay, so we've adopted the A1, and we're now going to take up the A4 as soon as the committee has the amendment. Okay, Ms. Taylor would like to explain a procedural item that we need to be aware of and how to correct it.
Mr. Chair, members, as I understand it, the A4 replaces the A3 amendment. So the A1, the A2, and A4 would be the ones up for consideration.
A1, A2,
and A4.
And A4. Do you concur with that, Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
All right, so Representative Wagenius moves Amendment 1057A2 in favor. Pardon me. I'm sorry, 1101A2. In favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And now the House File 1100A4 amendment, and then we will have the bill in the shape that the author so desires. In favor of the 1100A4, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Wagenius, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You have in your packet a memo from House Research. I have starred just one place in the memo. And it talks about a U.S. Supreme Court decision that sets the standard for state regulation regarding the export of groundwater. And the court said, and this is still current law, it's an old case but current law, that said that groundwater is an article of commerce and is subject to the Commerce Clause and the Dormant Commerce Clause. Therefore, a statute regulating the export of water that facially discriminates against interstate commerce would be reviewed by a court using the strictest scrutiny. Unfortunately, right now, our statute
for the export of water and the use of water in the state of Minnesota are different. And so what I am basically doing is making them, not basically, what I'm doing is making them the same so that our law is constitutional and thus useful to make sure that people can't come in from another state to use our groundwater. Because after that statute, that old statute was done and amended many times, we adopted, the legislature adopted a standard for the appropriation of water. And you will find that, I also put that in your packet, a statutory read here. This is our current law. So basically what the first part of this bill does is say that the commissioner will make a determination based on current law, both for in the state of Minnesota and from someone from outside the state of Minnesota appropriating water, and in this case it's 2 million gallons per day over a 30-year period. That's one part of the bill. The second part of the bill is a problem we have run into where people probably inadvertently believe that they have enough groundwater for their business and don't check. And all this is saying is if you are getting an EAW, you're required to do it anyway. Check to see if you have the water that you need. Because some people may find, and I can give you an example, but some people may find that, my gosh, I don't have water here. I should site someplace else, or I should consider reuse of water. That's what number, the second part does. What the third part does is say, and what we had testimony in committee that, and DNR can come out and talk to us about that. When we have a number of wells in this state that are 8-inch or bigger, using 10,000 gallons of water per day, and these wells have probably about 500 of these wells have been permitted by the Department of Health and never permitted by the DNR. So what this bill does is say, get a preliminary permit from the DNR so we essentially know where water is being taken from this state so DNR can manage the water. And I see DNR is here. If they would like to come up and comment on the bill, that would be fine with me.
Okay. The department, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and we have been working with the author and numerous other people on this issue over the past couple days. And I have Dale Holmuth with me here from our Eco Waters Division to talk about the technicalities of it, but part of the driver of this bill were some changes that were made to these statutes last session. Actually, it originated in the other body. It was amended on to a bill in conference committee, and we needed to come back and make some further corrections, which the author is doing right now. So, Mr. Chairman, with that brief history of it, I'm going to let Mr. Holmuth talk about the technicalities of it, and he can walk through the bill as it's amended or answer questions, however you want to move forward.
Why don't you give us a brief description of what the bill does from your perspective, and then we'll go to questions.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Dale Holmuth. I'm the manager of the Conservation Assistance and Regulations section over at DNR. And this bill, first, it changes some of the language regarding large diversions out of the state or out of major watershed basins in the state. Those kinds of diversions currently require approval of the legislature. I don't believe there's ever been one, at least not in my 38 years, that has come before the legislature. This bill would say say that any diversion that would occur like that would have to be sustainable, would have to, we'd have to assure that it doesn't damage the water supply for other areas. It also, I understand, A2, if I'm correct, Representative, removes the legislative approval requirement. And second part of Section 2 of this bill does the same thing for consumptive uses. Those are uses where water more than 2 million gallons a day, average over a 30-day period, are consumed, public water supply, industry, that sort of thing. Right now, that requires legislative approval. This bill would assure that any of those kind of large uses are sustainable, meeting the definition of sustainability that the representative has added back in, and also removes the pardon me.
It's already in
statute. It's already in statute, correct. It also would remove the legislative approval required for that. And I believe there was some concern originally this bill would have removed the exemptions the legislature had previously given to a number of operations, including some mine dewatering and pollution abatement, fish and wildlife projects. All that can be removed now since legislative approval would no longer be required under this bill anyway. And then finally, as Representative Aguinius discussed, there was there is new language on the environmental assessment worksheets, and I agree with the way she phrased that. These are things that people should be doing as part of environmental assessment worksheets anyway. This brings it up front, puts it in statute. Currently, an EAW form has a section on it that the applicants are required to talk about water resources in the area. This would make sure that they look at groundwater specifically, so we support that requirement. And and then probably what I think is the most important part of this is the preliminary approval of by the DNR for wells that are drilled. This has been a continuous problem for many years, where somebody goes in, they drill a well, they spend $10,000, $20,000, $100,000, $200,000 drilling a well. They get sort of automatic approval from the Department of Health to do that. Then they come a few months later to us wanting a permit to use the water out of the well. And if it's in an area where we have sustainability problems, it can be a real issue. We solved this issue a number of years ago with public water suppliers by requiring them to come in for our review before they drill their wells, so we avoid these disasters. But we still have this problem with all ag irrigation and industry, other large users, and this will correct that and require them to come to us to get preliminary approval before they get their health department well drilling permit. So we strongly support this.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Appreciate the work that Representative Wagenius is doing on this, and the amendments actually addressed a number of our potential questions about how the language would work. We actually support the language in the bill as amended. As you heard, public water suppliers already need to do a lot of this, and frankly, if any of them don't think they do, they probably should get reminded that it's a good idea. So it's pretty simple information to come in and actually know that what aquifer you're drilling to and how much water you're going to propose your community is going to need out of that aquifer before you start the well drilling. So the other changes that were made we think are workable, and we do appreciate the legislature not being the final decision maker on an issue really of science, and we've got good hydrologists in this state to take care of that part of the process.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Quillis?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to echo Mr. Johnson's comments also, and thank Representative Wagenius for dealing with some of the concerns that we had on Section 4. We think that amendment addresses a number of the concerns we had. We also think, Mr. Chairman, that in the environmental assessment worksheet, specifically section 13, or excuse me, question 13 of the environmental assessment worksheet, if you'll bear with me, talks about, the question says, whether or not you involve installation, abandonment of any wells, connections to any public water supply, or appropriation of any ground or surface water. If you check yes, then it says, if yes, please give the location, the purpose of any new well, a public supply affected, changes made, water quantities to be used, the source, the duration, the quantity, the purpose of the appropriation, etc. So we think that it might be covered already in the environmental assessment worksheet, but if this clarifies it on where we're going to go with the water appropriations, we don't have a problem with that. Mr. Chairman, obviously, Representative Wagenius and I have had a discussion about this, and I think she appropriately last time we talked about water in her committee was that it is very important to the state of Minnesota, whether it's tourism, recreation, for manufacturing, for agriculture, and personal use that we go through. So in terms of for the business community, that we want to make sure, too, we don't want to have water in terms of manufacturing, in terms of agricultural processing. We want to have it at our exposure, too, so we don't want to do anything that's going to damage the public water supply or make sure that we can manufacture or do whatever we're doing, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Pagel.
Craig Pagel, I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. We've also worked with the representative, really have appreciated her work on it. We do had some questions. We've seen some of the amendments that have come out today. At this point, we looks like it's a bill that we can support. We'll have our people review it, and I don't think if there's any problems, we'll definitely get back to the representative. But at this time, I don't see any problems. Water is also very important to our industry. It's part of the process. It's also where we live and enjoy every day.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you.
Do you believe, in your opinion, being the author of the bill, that this bill will have any effect adversely on hard rock mining in my legislative district and Representative Rukamina and Representative Moline and Representative Van Zyl's district?
I do not.
Thank you. Smith. Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the bill? There being none, now everybody has stayed in the room, so now we will have questions of anyone that has testified or then anyone who would like to testify. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, thank you for taking care of it. I was actually hopeful that I'd be the one taking care of it, but unfortunately that didn't happen because this is something that we took in conference committee that was wrong, and I'm glad it's getting fixed.
Thank you, Representative McNamara.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, I just want to check there's nothing in your bill that affects the Great Lakes Compact.
Representative Wagenius.
I don't think so. No, it would not. I can't imagine that it would.
Well, Representative Wagenius, my brief knowledge of that is about taking water out of the Great Lakes that is a diversion.
Mm-hmm.
For example, permitted uses are something like the Luton Mountain Ski Hill because the water returns, or a water drinking plant at the City of Two Harbors, for example, because ultimately the water returns back to the lake. So I think, Representative Hanson, that I would agree with Representative Wagenius that it wouldn't have any effect on the Great Lakes Compact.
Just double-checking for the record.
Well, you're double-checking with the, you need to be talking to an attorney, possibly, that's an expert on that. But I don't believe it does, having been to a few of those meetings. Anyone else have a question? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just clarification from me, so maybe even you could answer it. It was mentioned in the testimony that a number of decisions are going to be removed from the legislature and handed over to the DNR, I guess. Is that correct?
I believe, Representative Green, that they have always been making the decisions that the legislature, I think the DNR testified that in the 38 years that they have had this on the books, that they have not been asked to use that. The legislature is not asked to use that authority. Is that correct, Representative Wagenius?
That was the first time I had heard that, but in my experience, it has not happened.
Okay.
The one thing I would just note that up until 2010, there was no standard for DNR to use for water appropriations. in 2010, we put that standard into the statute. So we're just referring to the statute and the processes that DNR currently uses.
Mr. Chair, one more question, then I guess if I heard right, it said that approval had been already given to some entities to go ahead with projects, and that might now be removed from them. Did I hear that correctly?
Representative Wagenius.
I'm not sure I understood the question. I'm not sure I
understood. Well, I guess when I was listening to testimony, it seemed like it came up that if someone had already gone through the process and had gained approval, that under this law, that could be taken from them. Is that correct?
Representative Wagenius.
No, Mr. Chair, here's what I think the problem was, and there's an illustration of it. We had an ethanol plant sited, and after they went through all the processes and everything, they found out they didn't have that much groundwater. And so then the DNR had to say, well, you can use groundwater up to a point, but if the groundwater drops too much, then you have to go to the river, and that happened. So what we're trying to do is make people think ahead of time about their water use as a very important thing. I mean, I think in Minnesota we've always assumed that there's just plenty of water around. We see it on the surface and we assume it's underground. And I think the drought has just exposed some of the mythology there, and we have places in Minnesota that are really short of water right now. I mean, White Bear Lake would be one example. Worthington, that ran out of water, is another example.
Okay. Just one more. If we do this and we take the, even though the legislature and the DNR has not used this process, if we take away the process of the legislature having control, could that come back to haunt us? Would that take away any avenue for a business or even a city that would come in and want to dispute the DNR's assessment?
Representative Wagenius.
People always have the opportunity to come to the legislature.
But are we removing that with this law?
No, we're not. People will still have the opportunity to come to the legislature, but it's not a mandatory thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions on House File 1100 as amended, Representative Wagenius renews her motion that the bill be recommended to pass to the Environment and Agricultural Finance Committee with as amended. In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, members. Appreciate it.
Meeting is adjourned.